Welcome to the Healing for Male Survivors podcast. This is a podcast for male survivors of sexual abuse and assault, whether as a child or as an adult. Know that you are not alone and the abuse was not your fault. My name is Mike Chapman. I'm a certified recovery life coach and also a survivor. Let's find hope and healing together. Welcome to the Healing for Male Survivors podcast. This is Mike Chapman, and I'm here today with Dan Carlson. I'll give his intro in a moment. And if you would like to join us live, like our live audience here today, you can find out more on how to join at polarlifeconsulting.com/live. And for those of you who are in the audience today, if you would like to ask a question or make a comment to our guest, feel free to do so. We'll keep you as anonymous as you would like. Just enter in your questions into the Q&A area, and we will only say your name if you manually type it in with your question. Dan Carlson, 62, married with 4 children, 1 son of 30 and 3 daughters, ages 21 through 28. He has a 2-year-old grandson and a 15-month-old granddaughter. Okay, grandparent goals. I'm jealous. Dan is an HVACR technician in Tucson, Arizona, and gave his life to Jesus at age 6. Dan's childhood, although very normal appearing, was full of trauma, and there was also sexual abuse, wounds that he carried most of his life before Jesus set him on a path of healing. This is among the very first times that he's spoken about his life publicly in this way. But in the last 2 years, he's come to a place where he feels transparency and sharing is a way for him and others to heal. So he's not hiding anymore. So welcome to the podcast, Dan Carlson. And we start out like we do most episodes with 4 questions. Now it's time for 4 questions, that part of the podcast when we get to know our guest a bit better by asking a few questions. Let's go. Dan, what is your favorite food memory?
Okay, well, I had to think about this one a little bit, but when I was, I'm going to say, 9 to 10 years old, I was living in Madrid, Spain, and I had moved the American School of Madrid to a British school called St. Michael's Preparatory School. And I had 2 teachers, and their names were Miss Knight and Miss Smythe, very British ladies. I was absolutely smitten with both of them. So I got up the nerve, and I asked them both. They would come to my house for dinner. My mother would make us fondue. We had a whole fondue service, so my parents had done fondue, entertaining others on a number of occasions. And they both agreed. And so they came to my house, and my mother put on a fondue feast. I had these 2 heartthrobs, teachers of mine, came and ate dinner with my family. I felt like the king of the world. You know, the boiling oil with the meat and cheese, and then we had the little cake with the chocolate and all that kind of stuff. It was sublime. I just couldn't believe that they both accepted my invitation and came to my house. I don't know exactly how to describe it, but I just thought it was amazing. Like, they liked me.
Wonderful. So what is your favorite Christmas or holiday memory?
I would have to say, in 2004, we bought the house that I'm currently in, and my children were various ages. We have a long, narrow dining room, and we were able to put 2 of those, you know, those Walmart plastic tables together. So we had this huge, long table, and we had my parents and my wife's parents and my children and some of their friends and some of our friends. And I'm sitting at the head of the table saying grace over everybody. And I just felt like here I was, the patriarch of this meal. I provided the meal. I provided the setting, came to God with the prayer over everybody there. And it just felt so accomplished. I don't know exactly how to describe it, but I just felt like I never thought in my wildest dreams that I would be in that setting one day.
It's kind of the ultimate adulting, hosting a family holiday get together. Yeah, it's kind of an honor and rite of passage. And yeah, I know the first time I did that, I think it was in college, and it was like my home, and they're all coming to my home for this. And it was, yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, we had the hors d'oeuvres and, you know, the holiday music playing, and it was just sublime.
Yes, wonderful. So what is your favorite church memory or house of worship memory?
I have to say that when I came back to the Lord, I had been on a long hiatus. I came back to the Lord and I came back to my family in 1986. Started going to a little Baptist church, and I was so graded there. Although it was, you know, as you'll hear later, I had been down some pretty rough roads, and I was among all these people that just seemed like their life had been not like mine. You know what I'm saying? I don't think they've been exposed to the things I've been exposed to. Now I realize that's naive, but that's the way it felt. I had rededicated my life to Christ, and we had a Sunday evening service. Although I'd been baptized when I was 12 by my uncle, got rebaptized because of my renewed commitment to Christ. That was the first time that I think I understood entirely what I was doing because of the path that I'd been down prior to that, and felt like I was making a conscious decision for God against the ways that I had lived my life in the past. It was really good.
So what is your favorite scripture or any inspirational quote that has helped you on your spiritual journey, and what about it speaks to you?
So in my most recent return to Christ, as D6 was not my most recent return to Christ, this was in somewhere between June and September of 2022. I had an experience of surrender with Jesus, and I experienced his presence in a way that I never had before. Somewhere in that day or a few days after that, as I continually kept seeking him, wanting to know how I could remain in his presence the way that I was, the verses from Revelation 3:19 and 20 came to me. If you're on HM, you can look up those verses and you'll see a post that I put about them. He showed me this was a formula. Those two verses in Jesus' own words, he's in Revelation is a vision that John is having of heaven and of Jesus himself and of the Father and of angels and so on and so forth. And this, there's red letters because Jesus is speaking, and in Revelation 3:19 and 20, he says, "Whom I love," that's me because he has redeemed me, "whom I love, rebuke and I chide." In the past, I thought that those words were condemnation and punishment. I realized at that point what he was showing me is they were conversation. That was still small voice that we all know as Christians. When he's talking to me, he's rebuking me for what I'm endeavoring to do. He's telling me what I need to do. So then it says, so be zealous and repent. In today's vernacular, would say that that means hurry up and turn around. Look at me. And he says the same thing in a different word picture. And he says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come into him and I will eat with him and he will eat with me." I realized that all of the things that I was holding to Jesus all the time in my seemingly futile prayers in the past, things that I wanted him to change about me, the things that I wanted him to fix in my circumstances, the people that I wanted him to intervene on and change their outlook, those were all subject to the idol of myself and my self-image. So I had to put them all down and actually face him and look at him. So when you're standing there on the other side of the door and you're holding all of your stuff and put it down, and guess what happens? Then your hand is free to open the door and you can let him in. And then he says he will have communion with you, he will eat with you, and you will eat with him, and he will be in an intimate conversation with you like people are over a meal. That changed my world, and it is still to this day, clarion cry to everybody who's burdened and heavy laden and thirsty for Jesus to realize that all they have to do is lay their burdens down and look at him. Let him speak, and he will tell them what he thinks of them, what he feels about them, and how he has plans for them.
Amen. So going back to your third question, there was a Q&A, what's your favorite church memory? Someone from the audience asks, would you say, Dan, that you sense the redemption the Lord gives his children at that Baptist church?
I did, because I had been very, very far away from God, and I realized that he was still my Savior, and he was still my Lord at that time. I didn't have everything that I have now. I didn't understand a lot of things, but I did know I was redeemed and that I was snatched out of the jaws of sin and death again in my life.
Excellent. Now, let's talk about your story. I know timeline-wise, a lot of stuff gets jumbled. I know my story jumps around because that's how things were revealed to me. And so start wherever you would like with your story and all the way up to present day. And then let me know more about your healing journey as well. What has worked, what hasn't worked. And then all the way up to what you're doing these days.
So I was born in Tucson, Arizona. And my dad was going to college, mechanical engineering at the University of Arizona. And my mom was still in high school. And they met at Baptist Church of Tucson, which interestingly, not the same church, but it's the same building that my parents and I and my children are all worshiping in now at a non-denominational church.
Hmm.
Father, the headstrong, super intelligent guy, was a missionary kid, spent 6 or 7 years of his childhood in the jungles of Venezuela, where his parents were ministering to the Yanomami tribe.
This is your own father.
This is my own father. So he spoke Spanish, which plays into later on in my story. He was very involved with the church, as was my mother. And somewhere in that process, he dated for a couple of years. And somewhere in that process, I like to say he laid her down in the tall grass and he got her pregnant. My genesis into life and into church and into Christianity and into my family was my parents' marriage. I was already on board, standing up on the very podium that I watch every Sunday now. 3 years of age, I was up on that stage of a Sunday night, citing stuff like John 3:16 for the congregation. My father obviously had to go tell my mother's parents and so on and so forth. There was essentially the shotgun wedding. I believe that this caused a lot of dysfunction and dysregulation for my dad, essentially setting plans that he had. I honestly don't think that my mom was his ultimate goal as far as women goes. Now he was stuck with her. So during my gestation, and then after I was born, there's a lot of anger and frustration and violence on his part. The first time that he beat me as an infant was 11 months old, to where I needed first aid. I do believe that my father loved me all the time. I also believe that my father had no idea how to be a father, and he was driven by his own passions and his own very poor upbringing in terms of how to deal with children. He was very, very hard on me my entire childhood until I left home at 16. Beatings that he gave me were severe and unregulated. And I came to a place where I could actually give my body and observe myself being beat from some distance away, because that's what my little mind had to do. He's also very, very intelligent, and he was trying with every tactic that he could come up with to mold me into somebody he thought was going to be able to handle this life that I was facing. So he, as I like to say it, he mind fucked me really good. My mother was submissive and passive, and he beat her and abused me. And he continued to abuse me and abuse her after my sisters were born, but he didn't do the same thing with them. So there was a definite difference in the way they were brought up and the way I was brought up. At the age of 5, I felt like I had a neon sign over my head. I thought back on this. It said, "Broken little boy, come use me." And an older teenager that was a neighbor of ours that my mom left me in his care when she went shopping and things started to take me into the bushes behind the garage and introduce me to being the mommy family relationship. So that's when I was sexualized at that point. And
you're saying that person then abused you sexually?
He did.
Okay. And how old were you? You said you were 5? And how old were they?
I was 5. He was 15 to 18. And he, you know, he groomed me in the situation. We had a big bush behind my garage that was hollow inside, so you could go in there and it was like a house, and we'd go play house, and I was the mommy, and you can pretty much figure out how that worked out. My parents eventually did get wise to what was going on, and they did not afford me any counseling or even any their own counsel or speak of it at all or do anything to bring this neighbor kid to justice. Moves to another place was the solution. It was never spoken of to me.
But your family moved to another place at that time? Is that what you're saying?
Right. We moved.
Wow.
That was the way that it was dealt with. Realized it was happening and they took me out of the situation because they had no training or context or knowledge of how to deal with something like this. Okay. Figured kids are resilient. He's still alive. No visible harm. They'll snap out of it. Whatever, right? It wasn't until maybe a year later that I started to have dreams about a large penis with veins and stuff on it going into my mouth, and I couldn't understand. Did not have direct memories of what happened, but I started having these dreams about it, which obviously, since I'm having the dreams and I don't remember how they started, of course, as I'm processing this over the next several years, think that it's something to do with me, right. My own twisted nature. Do you see what I'm
right.
saying?
And that's how children at that age think, that they're so self-centered, just like when they pull a blanket over their head, oh, no one can see me because I can't see them. That's that part of their psychological development is very normal. They're very egocentric. So if there's a problem, I must have caused it. That's where their mind automatically goes at that age.
So fast forwarding through my childhood, that was back in Peoria, Illinois. Pennsylvania, there were other children my age that approached me for being doctor kind of stuff, and I always engaged. We later moved to Spain when I was 8, and the Spanish children thought me quite a novelty, and they had to get a look and a feel of me. So it's being handled throughout my early childhood by other adolescents. And then when I came back to the States, there were adults. There's one man in particular that was stalking me, interacted with me, and was grooming me. And he actually got me to come to his house once to ostensibly get a book about tennis, because he had met me on tennis courts at the U of A playing by myself. I didn't find out until years later when I was in the Navy and I got a ship to shore phone call from Tucson police that this man was a child predator and there was a bunch of kids buried in his backyard.
Wow.
So my father did. I told my father about this guy and about him lending me this book. He sent me back to give the book back, and he said, "Then you get the hell out of there." I don't think I would have done that at that point, but he sent me back to give the book back. This guy would show up anywhere that I happened to frequent. He would happen to be driving by and talk to me. So it was one of those kind of deals. He had my number. He was watching me. I very well could be buried in somebody's backyard if God hadn't intervened in that situation.
Yeah.
So I had a really tough time with my dad. That was going on until I was 16. Eventually came to a place where he said, either you conform to everything that I'm telling you to do. At that time included me not speaking to the girl that I liked at school because he didn't think she was good for me. And I said, "Dad, you can tell me where to be, when to be, how to be, what kind of underwear I can wear. I'm a young adult and I'm in high school, and you're not going to tell me that I can't say hello to somebody passing them in the hallway. And he said, well, if that's the way you feel about it, you can go. I found myself with a little bag on the streets on a Saturday night, and I did some couch hopping. I was 16 years old. I eventually got a job at a Sambo's as a dishwasher on graveyards. I was still trying to finish Sambo's. High school. I was still trying to finish high school, but that was difficult working all night and going to school all day. I got an apartment, and I had a bicycle that I'd had since I was living at home that I had done a lot of work on and had it. It was my bicycle. One night I came out from work to go home in the middle of the night, and somebody had cut my lock and taken the bike.
Oh, wow.
So I started walking to my apartment that I was sharing with one of the cooks, and a guy picked me up, and he lived in an affluent neighborhood, and he took me to his house, and he wined me, and he smoked me up on some weed. And then
how did you meet this guy?
He picked me up because I had to walk home that night because my bicycle was
gone. So he propositioned you to pick you up, or he just picked you up and threw you in his car?
He picked me up and then talked me into coming home with him.
Okay.
And he was a rich guy. He had a wine cellar and a jacuzzi and a pool. He got me feeling good, and he oral on me in the hot tub, and then he took advantage of me in his bedroom. And I felt at that point that this was my fault, that I had agreed to it all, though I was still in the same modality that I was in when I was being groomed up to that point. I had nothing that had corrected that for me, and I was 16 years old. Now I felt like my life was over, and that I was just damaged goods. I wasn't fit to be amongst humans. And I got really high, and I called my parents, and I told them what had happened, and they came and got me, took me back home, but I was still a handful. So they talked me into joining the Navy, and they signed me up, and I joined the Navy when I was 17. Wow.
And nothing inappropriate ever happens in the Navy.
No, several things inappropriate happened in the Navy. So I went through the Navy, and there were other men that approached me, and there were other situations. There were people that picked me up on the street, and eventually I went to a New Year's party with some of my shipmates at a hotel, and we were all dropping acid, and I thought I was having hallucinations, but it wasn't. And apparently I did oral on one of the other sailors, and one of the other sailors turned me in. So I was summarily booted out of the Navy, an honorable discharge.
Don't ask, don't tell days, I'm assuming.
Right.
Yeah.
But they gave me an honorable discharge under unsuitability conditions due to homosexual tendencies.
Well, so you did get an honorable discharge.
I did.
Okay.
So after that, I was in what we call detachment quarters, where they were processing my discharge. And I met a guy who was involved with a religious organization called The Way International. And they had a course on biblical research. And I took the course, and I stayed in Philly, which is where my ship had been. And I joined their organization, and I went out the fall of that year to a mission field as an itinerant missionary with other girls and a guy, and we set up house and started holding Bible studies at our home and running this class. And I moved my way up through the ranks of that organization until I was one of the city leaders, Montgomery, Alabama. But then one of my parishioners, if you will, induced me, a female. And she was into BDSM, and she introduced me to certain literature, and then offered herself to me as my slave, and I started having an affair with her. Well, the other leadership finally found out, and I was kicked out of there, out of that organization. Hitchhiked around the country after that. I didn't have any money, and I didn't have any prospects, and of course, there were horny men on the road, and they would see the neon sign over my head. And so I would sell myself for room and a warm bed and a warm shower and food along the way, till I finally made my way back to Tucson. Things continued similarly while I was in Tucson. I was very confused. In 86, one of my girlfriends, who I wasn't intimate with, but she was a close friend, asked me to take her to a clinic to get tested for pregnancy. I did, and she came back positive. So then she asked me to take her back for an abortion. And as far off of the reservation as I had gotten in terms of my faith, couldn't swallow that. I went to my parents and I asked them what they thought about the situation, and they referred me to a crisis pregnancy center. I talked with the director, who was a female, and a groundskeeper volunteer, who was a male, 3 or 4 hours, and I rededicated my life to Christ. And this was in 86. I moved back. My parents invited me to move back home with them, and I stayed with them for about a year with my sisters, who were still at home, and I got plugged into this church.
So what happened with your friend? Did she go through with the abortion?
Or? She did. She did go through with the abortion, but I didn't take her.
Right.
I did not take her.
I'm sure those crisis pregnancy centers very often or rarely work with males, especially when they're not the baby's father, and yet...
I came to them for advice about the female.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And then you ended up rededicating your life.
So I came back to the Lord, and I plugged myself into the church. I was running Bible studies. I was proselytizing work and with my friends, and I was on fire for Jesus. And eventually I met my wife, who had used to go to the church and was actually formerly been engaged to my best friend at the church, who was one of my mentors. But he was getting prepared to go on the mission field to China, and she was not prepared to go to China. They'd broken up. So she had gone to a different church so that she didn't have to be close proximity with him. But we showed up to a Christian play downtown that people from all kinds of churches were going to. And I met her there. She gave me a ride back to the church as my vehicle was there. Talked to her 3 or 4 hours that night, and I told her all about my life as far as I could tell. I was totally stunned and amazed that she did not run away screaming. A few years later, I was married to her.
Wow.
She had her own issues. She had childhood trauma of her own. On that ACE test, I score a 7 and she scores a 6, if that tells you anything.
Oh, yes.
Life is supposed to be pretty bad.
Anything really 4 and above has severe consequences. Yeah, most of the results simply say 5 or above. So anything 5 or above is like really high risk. And I'll have a link in the show notes on the whole ACE adverse childhood experience test and what it means and what the results show. But yes, anything 4 or above or 5 or above is considered extreme. And the fact that she had 6, you had 7, wow, that's a lot of trauma.
So we got married. We had 4 kids. During that time, when her triggers and my triggers were specifically designed for each other. So we had 30 years of some very, very rough territory. But Jesus had told me when I was thinking about marrying her, said to him, "I am really screwed up, Lord. I didn't even know about trauma then, but I knew I was messed up. I knew she was messed up by the way she reacted to things." And I said, "She's messed up and I'm messed up. How is this supposed to work?" I said, "You are both very messed up, but you're both going to be healed." I married her. We have had 33 years of some wonderful times, but some really, really underlying issues between us for the whole time. And of course, when I felt disenfranchised and isolated and alone, I went to porn and masturbation. And I didn't do it all the time, but there were periods where I would just like fall off and go spend a week or a weekend or a day where I would come to my senses. That went on until 2019. A gay friend of mine told me about a cruising site, and I was at the point where I thought that my bisexuality and my other propensities were literally a part of me that I could not ever escape, and I needed to engage them somehow or I was going to lose my mind. So I jumped off into the fetish community, the hooking up with men and being a dominant sadomasochist. And I did that for about 2.5 years. And I had the freedom to do it because I'm an HVAC technician and I'm always out doing side work. So my wife never really knows where I am anyway. And finally, Jesus was talking to me the first day that I dove in there. And he said, "Understand what you're doing. Understand why you're doing it. I'm not surprised, not confused, not angry, and I'm still with you." And he kept saying that for 2.5 years. while I reveled in my flesh and I reveled in the affirmation I was getting from the submissive community of men that I was engaged with. And I thought that I had found my special purpose in life somehow. Finally, my grandson was about to be born, and he was born, and I held him in my arms for the first time. And Jesus said to me, life are you bringing for this child from his grandfather? You're going to be the hedonistic, perverted, bisexual fetishist doing whatever he wants? Or are you going to speak life, love, and grace and discipline into his life? Within 2 weeks after that, I had come forward and told my family what I'd been up to. I walked away, all of it. I was doing a lot of weed at the time. I was doing poppers or rush or whatever you want to call it. I was doing a lot of stuff, and I was enjoying myself immensely. I was on cloud nine, but I knew I couldn't do that and have grandkids. That's how Jesus pulled me out. And I finally came to Jesus on my face, and I realized after I had told everybody what was going on, been kicked out of church for a time until they could determine that I was okay to rub elbows with the rest of the congregation. And my wife was completely destroyed and my kids were so hurt. Came to Jesus and I'm like, you've been with me this whole time because you've been talking to me. I don't know what to do. I have nothing to say to you that you don't know. I have nothing to offer you that you are going to accept from me. I need to know from you why you are saving me right now. What is your purpose for me? And what do you think about me? And then he flooded me with his presence. And I spent hours just bawling because I had learned how to surrender. Surrender means you lay everything down and you look right at him and you're like, don't have anything that you're worried about, but he thinks. That's why I bring up those verses I did earlier.
Right.
It was shortly after that that my wife shared with me an interview with Dr. Sherry Kiefer, Doug, and Drew Boa on one of his podcasts. And I discovered husband material. And then I was able to start processing all of this aloud, if you will,
right,
with the people, with the men in this community. Primarily you at the very beginning, Mike. you had to rein me in a few times because I was a wild card for sure. But it has been such a blessing to be in husband material, to process the struggle that I'm going through with these men, and to also help them, if I possibly can, to see this idea of communion and fellowship and the presence of Christ in their life, because it is the solution to porn and masturbation. Once you've experienced Christ in this way, all you want is to go back there, and it ain't porn and masturbation that's going to get you there. And it's not even right. Wild sex. Nothing compares to being with Jesus. Nothing. And that's all I got to say.
Intimate relationship for sure with Jesus. Yeah. And that's that God-shaped hole in our hearts that we try to fill with other things until we get that real thing. Then everything else just pales and doesn't fulfill until you get the real thing. And then you get it, and there's nothing else like it.
No, once you have been in his presence in this way, I don't see how it's even possible to think that you need to go back to anything else.
Right.
It's a question of, you know, it's like Jesus has got what I need, and the only coin he accepts is surrender.
Yes, very good. So what are you doing now with your healing journey? You mentioned a husband material. And
yeah, well, so,
are you in any in-person support groups or therapy, or what things have worked and also what things have not worked that you've tried?
So I am in another ministry called Better Pleasure, which is run by a guy named Bo Olette.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Calvary pastor. We have an in-person group, and we do not follow a traditional 12-step program or anything like that. We are a group of men seeking sexual purity and community. I meet with them, curiously enough, Tuesday nights. Also, I've been through betrayal trauma recovery therapy with my wife and a CSAT, and I have not done well with that because I still have not really been able to process my own triggers, and so I'm having a really hard time dealing with my wife's. Currently separated for the last 5 months. Okay. And I'm planning on going back home this week. Not because anything's better, but because I feel led that I need to be there and deal with things head on. Jesus is with me every day and he sustains me. Suicidal ideation is a thing that's plagued me my whole life and it hasn't stopped entirely. I know where it's coming from now and I can run to Jesus and he sends it away. I had demons. A lot of demons that were involved in what I was doing for those 2.5 years, and they were my cohort. Sending them away was something I had to send Jesus to them and not try to fight myself. And
so on top of the trauma and the wounding from the trauma, you also, it sounds like, dealt with spiritual warfare as well, and you've dealt with actual demons that were working against you.
Correct. Everybody who is being assaulted continue in porn and masturbation or any other type of unwanted sexual behavior. There's at least one demon that's talking to you every time you go there. It's not that you're possessed, but they're on the job. They're on the job and they're talking to you. And you have to know the difference between their voice, your own voice, and the Savior's voice. And
I believe
I learned
called,
the difference.
Denomic oppression, I believe, is the term, not possession, but oppression.
Right.
In certain religious circles.
I thought I was something when I was in that community. And my avatar was me with ram's horns growing out of my head. If that imagery tells you guys anything, tells you that I was identifying with demonic.
And so you mean when you were in the BDSM community, you had an avatar that was an amalgam of your face with ram's heads? Is that what you're saying?
Right, because I'm an Aries by my zodiac sign, so I was identifying with the ram and with the sexual energy of the ram and so on and so forth. And I didn't really think anything of it until you put a picture of what I had for my avatar up next to a typical picture of Satan, and it was pretty much the same. Am I making any sense?
Very much. Yep.
Well, that's about all I got.
Okay. All right. Is there any other questions from the audience? Feel free to put those in the Q&A section. Someone had asked about aces, and for those on husband material, I have a post there, and I will also add a post in the show notes along with the PDF that I created on basically recreating that post for anyone who wants to share it as a PDF as well. And I will add that to the show notes. So don't see any other questions coming in. So any final thoughts, Dan?
Yeah. So for any of you who know me or want to get in touch with me, you could text me on WhatsApp. Mike has my contact information there, or you might even have it because of this group. But if anybody wants to know what
part of what I do on husband material, and actually with Polar Life Consulting, my own group, we have a live chat room within WhatsApp, and information on that group I will have in the show notes as well if you would like to join.
So yeah, if you have any questions about my experience with Jesus Christ, which is I'm a one-trick pony. That's what I talk about. And how I know that anybody can approach Jesus Christ in a way that if they've never experienced him this way, that they can. That's I'm ready to talk about that as long as it takes.
Right. Wonderful. And you've had the huge healing journey and you're still going on it and continuing to look at your own healing and the healing in your marriage as well. So that's wonderful. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your story with us this week, Dan. Again, if you would like to join us live on future episodes, you can find all the information on my website, polarlifeconsulting.com/live. And with that, we'll see you next time on the Healing for Male Survivors podcast. If you would like to learn more about my coaching with Polar Life Consulting, where I provide one-on-one coaching and group coaching, both with a focus on healing for male survivors, reach out to me at polarlifeconsulting.com. That is Polar, spelled P-O-L-A-R. I would love to hear from you. I want to hear your story. If you would like your story featured on this podcast, contact me via my website. If you like this podcast, please rate and review, because that's how other people can find me, and I really want to spread this message of healing and hope to others. And remember, you are not alone. Healing is possible, and the abuse was not your fault. Let me repeat that. The abuse was not your fault. See you next time on the Healing for Male Survivors podcast.